Why don't you start with how this was for your family, as far as like, what was the day like, and that waiting period? Why don't we start with that? I feel like a lot of people are familiar with the story, but maybe not from the family's points of view.
Well, the first night Tim was missing, and the first full day, were absolutely terrifying, and we were really lost and scared, and you know, we were terrified on Tim's behalf. And then it was 6 days of, you know, captivity for Tim, and abuse, and what I would quantify as torture. He was held captive and then sexually assaulted. His body was dumped in Livonia 6 days later, and that meant that Livonia Police Department and Wayne County were the jurisdiction in my brother's.
When something like this happens, it really does become one of those things where it's like, there's always going to be a point where it's like before and after. But what is one of your best memories of you and your brother?
Well, I was going through a really close period with Tim. You know, if you have four kids, people tend to pair up, or it's 3-on-1. But I was an assistant 1 hour a day at Adams School, where Tim was going to school. And so occasionally we would cross paths in the hallway, and he would always elbow his friends and say, "That's my sister," which was really kind of cool. It's a fond memory. And I worked there. I got credit for doing some kind of community outreach, and I worked with a preschool there. And he was, you know, I was going away to college soon, and I don't know, there was already this sense that our time was limited. So we had been quite close in the months leading up to that night.
As far as suspects, do you have a suspect in mind that you're like, this person seems like the most likely to have been involved?
Well, I agree with the Canadian criminologist, Dr. Michael Arntfield, who reviewed this case incredibly carefully in 2012 and later for a documentary. His conclusion was that this was a group killing, that there were numerous people involved who had different roles. I think there is strong evidence that Chris Bush of Bloomfield Village was involved, that Greg Green, a pedophile from Flint, was involved, at least in the Mark Stebbins case, and that there were other players involved in the captivity, the murder, and the dumping of the kids' bodies. But I, you know, Chris Bush, there's a lot of evidence implicating him, as much as Oakland County seems to refute and reject that.
And who is Christopher Bush? I know that I've heard the name before, tied to this case, but who is he for people who maybe haven't heard that name before?
Chris Bush was a 27-year-old man, the son of H. Lee Bush, who in 1970 was named the comptroller of the Cadillac division of GM. Bush had numerous criminal sexual conduct cases. He raped boys and sexually assaulted boys, and he was becoming a big problem for his family in Bloomfield Village. So he was everywhere that 27-year-old man lived. I suspect boys were raped. But so he was the son, you know, he lived 2.5 miles from us in Bloomfield Village. And, you know, despite having every advantage in life, including being sent to La Rosi, which is, you know, basically the world's most exclusive boarding school, and more money than God at the time, he used his life to perpetrate crimes against boys.
Do you believe that there's a chance that maybe DNA is buried somewhere that hasn't been found, hasn't been tested yet?
Well, maybe I could give you the overview of the DNA evidence that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Okay. Because this dance goes back to 2005 when Corey Williams of Livonia Department Police Department started investigating pedophiles in the Cass Corridor who indicated they may have knowledge about the child killer case. So in 2005, Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy had to essentially demand that the MSP, the Michigan State Police, find the kids' clothing and line up all of the evidence so that it could be retested using what was then the most advanced DNA testing. And at that point, the state police didn't even know where some of the evidence was. The lab director did not keep his promise to start reprocessing the evidence, you know, complaining that they had too many current active cases. So Prosecutor Worthy had to stay on them. And then it was like a year or 15 months of finding all of the evidence, including at the FBI. The FBI had some trace evidence that they had to collect. There were, and that was in Detroit. It took at least 9 months to find a slide that had a hair found on the groin area of my brother. So this way back then is when they started having to try to recollect all of this evidence, which was not in an organized fashion and was not in the same place. So, and to this day, the state police steadfastly refuse to reprocess the kids' clothing, even their underwear. They refuse to reprocess that. So then we have the hair evidence, okay? Hairs were found on Tim, on Mark, and in the vehicle of a suspect, Arch Sloan. And that hair evidence was initially processed by the FBI in early 2010. And in 2019, I wrote the task force and told them about a lab called Estrella Forensics in Santa Cruz that had just developed a method for obtaining, in some cases, nuclear DNA from hair evidence, which was, you know, it was groundbreaking. And even in cases where the stuff was quite degraded. So 2019, the hair evidence. I don't know what they're down to now, how many hairs. They extinguished a lot of them through testing. There was also a hair found on Christine Mihalik's shirt that Vince Gunnels, could not be excluded as having been the source of. And he was a victim of Bush and Green, but then later ran with them and allegedly was somebody who would, you know, lure in kids for Bush and Green. That hair was extinguished during testing. But, you know, there's still the four hairs. There's still Estrella Forensics has taken off, so they've known about that since 2019. And then you have the Weister evidence from a vaginal swab taken from Christine's autopsy kit. And if you want a really good overview of how the evidence was misfiled, misstored, mishandled over the years, The Snow Killings by Marnie Keenan covers all of it. And the book is heavily indexed, so the reader can just look up DNA and in the index, and it's all spelled out there. But this Weister was the biology department of the state lab reran that vaginal swab in 2019 and found Weister DNA, and Weister is, it's male DNA, and it was a partial Weister, so it wasn't complete, and the Weister is male DNA, and if you find male DNA in the body of a 10-year-old child, female, she has been raped, and the Weister was then, that's written about in Marnie Keenan's book. And then in 2022, the state contacted a third-party lab called Identifinders International. And this information I obtained from a FOIA request. That third-party lab was going to compare the Weister profile from Christine's autopsy to genetic genealogy Weister databases, which are limited. It's not like CODIS, where they have just a lot more, you know, nuclear DNA. But in any event, the Weister, they got just these very basic results, Caucasian European, and they gave a surname, a possible surname. Now, the important thing about this determination in 22 was that they felt there were a lot of false positives because of the grade of the Weister DNA sample. And that lab offered to rerun it, to upgrade the sample to include different markers, additional markers. And to my knowledge, nobody at the state agreed to pay for that upgrade, and the inquiry was dropped. So that was in 2022. And I continued to ask about it and was told that the sample and the determinations by the lab were passed on to a genetic genealogist with the FBI. And maybe 9 months, I continue to inquire, what is the status of the project? And nobody can give me a straight answer about what is going on with that Weister DNA, which even though these are partial or degraded samples that they're working with the hair and the Weister, if they're serious about solving the case, they need to take an aggressive approach to the DNA testing.
Do you think that things like genealogical DNA, like the way that they caught the Golden State Killer, and I know they've solved other crimes this way, but do you think that something like that would be useful in a case like this?
Oh, absolutely. And that arrest of Joseph DeAngelo was in 2018. A handful of people have approached me and offered their genetic genealogy services for free to the state, and nobody has taken me up on it. But yeah, that's probably the only route, because the person who, some of the people who were involved in those crimes, they are not in the FBI's CODIS system. They haven't been previously convicted. So that would absolutely be an incredibly valuable route here. And you mentioned, do I think there's DNA that hasn't been found? Well, or, you know, hasn't been tested. I just learned last week that the sheriff's office is working on this case. If they have DNA that they are holding on to, I can't speak to that, but that needs to be sent to the state lab. And it appears to me that the state is willing to work with third-party labs. But yeah, they need all the evidence in one place.
I know one of the big theories that people have is that there are possible connections about North Fox Island. Do you think that there's any connection between the Oakland County child killer and North Fox Island?
There could be. It could be that someone had been to the island, and then once that kind of got shut down in the summer of 76, they escalated in Oakland County. And, you know, Joel Gorzon was working for the state police on the Fox Island case. And in a document dated March 7th, 1977, it's mentioned that Gerald Richards, who was, you know, one of the cohorts of Frank Sheldon on North Fox, that Richards may, quote, may know something about Christopher Bush. Okay, Christopher Bush mentioned in a document written or attributed to Joel Gorzon on March 7th, 1977, and 9 days later, my brother gets abducted. So, you know, they were looking at Fox and Bush and Fox Island and Bush, But, you know, nobody's been willing to investigate that. And I don't know, Joel Gorzon's problem, he may still be alive. I don't think anyone ever interviewed him. And Gorzon must have mentioned Bush to reporter Marilyn Wright, because there's evidence that Marilyn Wright, who was a reporter from up north, Traverse City, visited Gerald Richards in prison because he was writing her, and that they discussed Chris Bush. And then Wright and Gorzon compare notes. So it's not like people are just pulling this out of thin air. It's just that nobody was willing to connect the dots.
Do you think that if Chris had been investigated a little bit more thoroughly, do you think that there's a chance that these killings could have been stopped earlier?
Well, he was arrested in Flint on January 28th of 1977. So it certainly could have prevented my brother's abduction and murder. And if you read the FOIA documents, the guy is, he's just quite willing to discuss the case, you know, right up to the edge, but they wouldn't, and they get arrested together, Bush and Green. Green is a known prolific pedophile with like 46 counts in California before he moved back to Flint. So yeah, if they had pulled the threads and been more serious about the possibility that some guy from Bloomfield Village could have been one of the people participating in these crimes, yeah, it could have prevented my brother's abduction.
And I think kind of the question that is on everybody's mind, given the amount of time that's passed, do you think that the killer is still alive?
I believe that the odds are that somebody who participated or knows who participated in those crimes is still alive. I also believe that there is law enforcement still alive who knew about kind of the shell game played with Chris Bush. But, you know, it's just as likely that, you know, the main players in this are dead. But I'll tell you something. We didn't ask these people to resurrect their task force in 2006. They're the ones who resurrected it. And if somebody participated and died, they can make that announcement and close the case. But, you know, the fact that the main players are probably dead, that's just a function of the passage of time. If they're concerned about spending money on this case, they should just announce to the public what they have done, why they are no longer willing to spend money on the case, and they should open the case file.
Do you believe that there is still the chance, based on the technology that we still have available, people who may have seen something, like Sheriff Bouchard had mentioned previously that somebody may have seen something, was worried about coming forward. Do you think that this case does still have a chance of being solved?
Well, there's always a chance that someone would come forward. My problem with that statement is that over the last 20 years, lots of people came forward and they didn't get their phone calls returned, and or the police didn't believe their story. Is there a chance that somebody could step up? Yeah, there's a chance. And like with the kids' clothing, I suspect they don't want to retest it because of how many people handled that evidence back in the day. So it could be embarrassing for them. But, you know, there's a third-party lab, DNA International in Florida, and they use this device called an MVAC, and it, you know, puts a solution on the evidence, the clothing, and then like a scientific wet vac, it pulls the solution out, including all, you know, DNA that hadn't been previously picked up, and they can run it. So no, it's not impossible. Might they pick up the DNA of, you know, people who should not have touched it, like a psychic, or, you know, we've been told that they used that clothing in post-training, that the state police used it in post-training. You know, so maybe it picks up the DNA of someone who was handling the evidence, you know, 20 years ago. But they still can do it. The time is over where they just talk about this stuff. I mean, as I said, 21 years ago, Tim Worthy, you know, went to the state police and said, you get all this evidence together and let's retest the kids' clothing. And here we are in 2026, and they still refuse to do it.
If you could leave people with a message, whether it be our listeners, law enforcement, the killer, if they are still out there, what would you say?
I don't have any words for the killer or anyone who would protect such a person. I guess I would like the public to know that the time for talk is over. We need an aggressive approach to the DNA testing in this case. We need a public explanation of what has been done and what can still be done with the testing, and some assurance as to how a serial murder of four children that involved the biggest manhunt in the nation at the time, how we can never be in a situation like this again where evidence is so mishandled and later ignored. That would be my message.
And is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to get across that I just haven't thought of?
No, I mean, you really did a good job. It's, you know, you can hear the frustration in my voice, because with the coverage last week, people have been reaching out to me saying, yeah, I heard there are, you know, new advances and, you know, that can benefit the child killer case. Yeah, this stuff's been around since, you know, at least 2018. 2018, the genetic genealogy stuff, 2019, Astraea Forensics, all of the advances in lab work. Well, yeah, it's all well and good to talk about it, but if nobody's going to do it, it's just talk. And I don't understand why they can't update as they go. And I guess I'll just say this one other thing. On HBO, there's a documentary about the yogurt shop murders. And those were the murders of four teens in Austin, Texas. And a cold case there in our cold case detective, I think his name was David Jackson. Forgive me if I get it wrong. He came in just relatively recently. He just said, despite the fact that the crime scene had been ignited, it had been like a five-alarm fire, and the bodies were just soaked with water to put the fire out. In spite of all that, we are going to try again. We're going to, they obtained a Weister, a complete profile from the child that this killer raped, and we're going to take their fingernail scrapings and we're going to solve this crime. And then they did it. So if anybody's thinking this is, you know, this is too hard, this isn't going to work, watch the documentary on HBO about the yogurt shop murders and see what a committed, aggressive cold case detective can accomplish, even after 30 years and even when the evidence has been doused in 2 feet of water.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. That it's an important thing to talk about. My mom and my uncle grew up in Oakland County around this same time. So I grew up hearing them both say, well, like, don't get close to cars with strangers. And I feel like there's an entire generation of people that grew up in Oakland County that they did kind of have this experience of their parents being like, don't approach anybody. I feel like it is kind of one of those situations where you lose a little bit of innocence when something like this happens.
Oh, absolutely. And I have not lived in Michigan since 1977, and I've lived in different parts of the country, and I have come across people who were parenting in Oakland County at that time. And they told me about the horror and the terror and how it affected their parenting. And of course, through my blog, I hear from a lot of people who were kids in Oakland County then and the devastation that it wrought on their childhoods. So it's no small thing.
No, I think that people do pay attention to stuff like this, and especially with all of the technology that we've developed over the last 10, 15 years, there is more of a focus on these kinds of cold cases where there are options that weren't available in the 70s or the 80s.
Oh, yeah. And in view of all these cold case solves, you know, not just in the country, but around the world, it just seems like a continuing betrayal of those kids not to aggressively approach the DNA possibilities here.
Hopefully, I am always hoping with situations like this that we can eventually figure out what's going on and who's behind it. But hopefully it happens sooner rather than later.
Well, this is the thing I mean about, like, they need to update the public like that detective did in Austin. because let me tell you, they can push the food around the plate for another 15 years if they slow walk this testing, or they, you know, the case gets handed to a new detective. I mean, they should be telling their constituents, you know, how they are approaching this case. And if the results are, hey, the stuff's too old and too degraded, be honest about it.
I can definitely tell it. It's got to be frustrating dealing with a situation like this where information kind of gets trickled out to the media every once in a while if the media reaches out. But there's no big, like, we are still working on it, this is what we have. Or like you said, unfortunately, where we are right now, we're just not going to be able to move forward. But being stuck in this gray zone of waiting, it is not helping anybody.
No, it's really detrimental to people's view of law enforcement. And believe me when I tell you, I mean, we could talk for five more hours. The left hand does not know what the right hand is doing in this case. And, you know, sadly, I mean, everyone's entitled to retire. And Detective Williams retired, and he knew the case as well as anybody and was subjected to all of these frustrations as well. And now it's just back to 2005.